lived experience is like having a PhD in life. And that is, and it's true. Lived experience is something that cannot be replicated within a classroom. So just really making sure that young people realize that the things that they experience has power, it holds weight, and that they deserve to be heard.
Welcome to the Generation Youth Podcast, where we ignite the future by empowering our youth. I'm James McLamb, your host, founder, and CEO of Generation Youth, and the author of the best-selling book, Tomorrow's Youth. Whether you're a parent, an educator, youth pastor, or coach, join us as we dive into the pressing issues facing our young people today. Together, we'll unlock the strategies, insights, and inspiration to elevate and equip our next generation. Stay with us, and let's make a difference, one youth at a time. Welcome to the Generation Youth Podcast. I'm your host, James McLamb, and today we're going to talk about a topic that really is on the front of a lot of people's minds who deal with youth, and that's mental health. And I'm privileged to have a new friend with me, Amanda Grace Cryer. How are you doing, Amanda Grace?
I'm doing pretty well. It was a very nice warm day where I'm here in Pennsylvania, so can't complain. Love warm days.
I do as well. I love warm days as well. We're having kind of mild weather when we're recording this, kind of mid-spring here in North Carolina. Well, Amanda Grace, our audience loves to hear from my guest about themselves. They don't want James to be talking the whole time, so they'd rather hear from you about you. So if you wouldn't mind, take a couple minutes and introduce yourself to the Generation Youth audience.
Yeah, sure. Well, hello. My name is Amanda Grace Cryer. Feel free to call me AG, because sometimes Amanda Grace is a mouthful for some people. I am a dog mom. I am a lover of sushi and fried pickles. I am a retired Irish dancer, and I teach Irish dance. But I also am a suicide loss survivor. I'm a person who lives with mental illness, and I have the privilege of working every day as a mental health professional and working in the youth and young adult space at a social justice advocacy organization where I get to impact lives of youth across the country.
I love that you talked about what your passion and what drives you to work with mental health. Tell our audience how you got into this and what you're doing with that before we dive into maybe some of the issues that are facing it here.
Yeah. The way I describe my life to people is that if you would have told me at 15 years old, this is what I was going to be doing with the rest of my life, I never would have believed you. Because this was not supposed to be my story. This was not supposed to be my family's life. But in September of 2017, I got the call that my cousin Sean had died by suicide, and that wrecked us. That wrecked my world. I didn't know that there was a place lower than rock bottom, but there is, and my family found it. But through my grief, I really started to feel this need to do something, that I couldn't just sit here anymore and let my grief consume me. And so the more I began to tell my cousin's story, the more I realized that I also have a story, that I also have my own personal struggles with mental illness that I was not at the time willing to face. So as I became volunteering and doing a lot of advocacy work in my community, I just kind of fell in love with it, and specifically fell in love with working with youth and young adults. And the more that I did, the more I realized I want to do this all the time, that I love this. So then overnight, I changed my major. I was an American Sign Language major, and I said to my mom, I changed my major to behavioral health. And she was like, wait, maybe we should think about this. And I was like, nope, this is what I'm doing. And I've never looked back.
Wow. I love that the passion has driven you to rethink the future and what your calling is in life, and your past experiences have done that. You know, mental health, youth mental health is really on the forefront. A lot of books that are coming out now. The Anxious Generation was just released, which talks about social media's impact on mental health. From your professional
And I'm going to refer to you as a professional because I think based on the experiences you have, you're probably one of the most experienced and expert people that we've had on the show in quite a while. What do you think are some of the issues that are driving the mental health crisis in youth today? Because I think we got some parents that are listening, maybe some teachers that are listening, maybe even some young people are listening. They hear it. They hear it on the news. They hear it on media. There's something, and they're like, what's going on here? Why is this happening? Especially some of the older parents are going like, hey, my generation was fine or perceived to be fine. What's happening now?
I think there's like a long-winded answer for it. I think that today, in the light of, you know, the world being more connected than it's ever been, we've never been quite so lonely. Ooh. That a lot of youth and young adults that I have the privilege to work with in the past, that one of their biggest things that they have said is feelings of loneliness and isolation, which a lot of people, like, they're like, what do you mean? Like, you know, you can pick up the phone and you can FaceTime somebody and, like, you can, you know, talk to people across the world now and you're lonely. But they are. That there's this lonely and isolation feeling that a lot of youth are feeling, but also that it's not necessarily that past generations haven't had similar struggles to the youth, that the youth of today. It's just that I think that the youth today are a lot more open about talking about it. That this generation of youth that are emerging are the most self-aware individuals that I have ever met in my entire life. And like, even with talking, you know, to my mom, comparative to talking to one of my little brothers, is that my mom said, when we were depressed, you got a job. Like, you went to work, you know, you kept moving forward.
Yeah.
And today, when youth realize that they're not okay, they're saying that. So I think that it's not necessarily that this is something new, but I think it's something that is being addressed more.
Wow. That's good insight into the situation. They're more open to say it. And I agree with you 100% on the loneliness and isolation. I think it was Dr. Tim Elmore from Growing Leaders that coined a phrase that was very close to what you just said. He said that, you know, the generation of today is the most connected generation in all of history, but they're also the loneliest.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to that. So I don't think some people are going to understand that. How can you be lonely when you have the ability to FaceTime someone on the other side of the planet at a moment's notice? Why are they so lonely? What do you think?
I'm not entirely sure. And I'm a person who I specifically working for a youth advocacy organization. I think the best way to ask these questions is to ask youth directly.
Mm.
That I'm a big advocate of nothing about us without us. And I think that is a question that even a lot of youth are also asking themselves, because I don't think that they necessarily know. I do think that social media has a card in it. And how I, in my personal lived experience, describe it is that I was somebody who I remember pre-social media.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, now we have social media now. And comparative to someone who is younger than me, who has had their entire life on social media, I am able to differentiate the difference between what is real, what I'm seeing, and what is not real. That I understand, and I think it also comes with the fact that I'm 25, so I'm a little bit older, but that I'm able to look at social media and see all of these happy posts that everybody is posting, and I know that they're just posting their highlight reel, you know? Like, they're not mm-hmm. going to post their darkest moments on social media. Some people do. I do, because I think it's important to shed light on those things, but like, they're going to post, of course, like, the happy pictures of them at a baseball game and with their significant other, but they're not going to share the fact that they just cried into their mac and cheese yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is something that for people who are not like me, who have grown up with social media their entire life, it's a little bit harder to differentiate between what is real and what is not.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And what I'm hearing you say is that youth today are looking at posts and they are not understanding that what they're seeing is someone's best day or someone's edited best day. And they're comparing that to their worst day. And I can't live up to that, where maybe my generation We had to go to a store and see a magazine and pull it off the shelf and see curated pictures there. And we kind of knew those were, you know,
yeah,
those were created to be that good looking. But now you see that happen. So I almost think, you know, when you were saying about it, it's not real. I wonder if that's one of the reasons why the app Be Real. Is it Be Real?
Be Real.
Yeah. The new app. Yeah, if that's why that is becoming a little bit more popular, because it doesn't give you time to.
No, and it's completely like raw photos too. That like I'm somebody, and I'm completely honest with anybody I meet, anybody I talk to about it. Like, if you look at my social media, I can tell you that I have whitened my teeth on an app in every photo that I'm completely, I don't care. I've done it. But Be Real, you can't do that. It's raw photos right in the moment. But I agree. I think that might be a reason why.
For those of you who are listening or watching that are not familiar with Be Real, because it's not a mainstream, you know, one of the forefront. My understanding, because I'm not on it, but my understanding is you get a notification. Once you sign up for the app, you get a notification and you have a 2 minutes if you choose to respond?
Yeah, I think it's 2 to 3 minutes and it takes a photo. So here, I have my phone right here. So it takes a photo of you, but it also takes a photo of whatever is behind you as well, and has it like a little off to the side so you can see the front and back of the camera. So some people, when they're taking their B-reels, if they're like in a hike or something, you can see them like posing, but then you can see like the trees in the back or like a really beautiful skyline. But that is essentially what B-reel is.
If I understand this correctly, if you decide to post, that is your one post for today.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get another opportunity. Now, if you choose not to, you may get a notification later in the day to do it again. But once you've clicked on that, you're on, is that correct? Am I right on that?
I'm not sure about that. That might be. I had Be Real on my phone. I don't have it on my phone anymore. But when I had it on my phone, it was just that one moment. But they might have edited it. So you can't.
Yeah, I'm not sure with all the logistics of it. I'm just sharing what little bit I know about it. And I think part of the reason why something like that has happened, and why the app has evolved and was created, was just what you talked about. People, the creators of it, wanted folks to be their authentic self and not to compare themselves to these edited things. And maybe it helps a little bit more. And you could only see the people that you're friends with. So,
yeah,
you know, you don't get an algorithm that sends you somebody that you may not want to know and all that kind of stuff. So, all right, getting back into the mental health thing that is going on here as we're being real. I think some folks are going to be concerned about their young people that they're working with. Maybe their children, maybe there's somebody as a teacher working with youth or something in a youth group, in a church setting or some faith setting. What are some signs that they can look for that are kind of, hey, this young person may need some help? What can they be looking for here? Because I know that I'm concerned and I want to know what to be looking for. I don't want to perceive the wrong things and I want to know.
I think that, so there is no one size fits all when it comes to warning signs for suicide or warning signs for necessarily like a specific mental health condition, that it looks differently for everybody. But what I can say is that if somebody that you know is acting out of their norm of however like they normally act, that like if there's somebody who is normally an isolated person, that, you know, they're very like quiet and they keep to themselves, and all of a sudden, like flip of a switch, they are extremely animated and they're outgoing, that might be a warning sign that not a lot of people know to look for when it comes to suicide. That I know that is, there's a term for that now that's called pink clouding. And it's normally when somebody
pink clouding,
and that's normally when somebody has come to terms that with the plan that they're going to attempt on ending their life, and they are now in this pink cloud. And so that's a warning sign that not a lot of people know to look for. But when it comes to just mental health and mental illness across the board, I think that if somebody is acting outside of their norm for longer than 2 weeks, then that is something that they might want to talk to a mental health clinician.
So if we're seeing, what I'm hearing is if we're seeing someone that we're close to and there's something different, they're introvert normally, now they're a gregarious person, or vice versa. They're gregarious, which is probably what most people think.
Yes.
You know, and the other one, they're probably thinking, oh, they're finally coming out of their shell and they're not thinking that could be out of character. That's very insightful. That's pretty profound. So at the 15-minute mark in this podcast, we all need to rewind this thing and go back, because that was some truth bombs there that I really hadn't thought about. It's just really acting outside of your norms. I really love that, EG, that you stress that it's differently for everyone and it's outside their norms. So we see that and we get kind of red flags. The hair on the back of our neck stands up. We're getting kind of some kind of feeling here. What do we do? What's step one? What would you recommend for us to do? I guess there's not really a set plan, but what would you recommend?
There can be a set plan. I think that if you're approaching somebody with a concern, I think the best way to do it is to sandwich it. That it's, hey, I just want to let you know that I really care about you and you're a really important person to me. But I've noticed these things, and you want to list the specific things that you've noticed. Like, I've noticed that you're withdrawing yourself from classes. I've noticed that you are giving some of your things away. And I just want to know, like, if you're doing okay, because I really care about you. So that's the sandwich that you want to put it, because it's a little bit more easier to swallow when it's, I care about you. These are the things I'm noticing. Are you okay? Because I care about you. So that is how I would attempt to approach the situation. And I think that if it's something specific like suicide, if you're not aware, there's a great suicide prevention community training that you can take. It's called QPR, called Question, Persuade, Refer. And it teaches everyday people the tools necessary that if someone in your life you suspect, you know, might be experiencing suicidal ideation, suicidal thoughts, might be planning to attempt suicide, that is a community-based, evidence-based training that anybody can utilize, and you don't have to be a mental health professional in order to save a life.
Ooh, QPR. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. We need to get that information in the show notes. You know, how to connect that. So we need to do that, because that's Question, Persuade, Refer.
Yes.
And I love your sandwich. So that really was powerful, to be able to sandwich the hard fact in the middle, of the meat of it, with the affection, the caring, the showing them that we want to connect with them on those ways before, you know, we approach that. Because I could even see myself taking the bread off of that sandwich and just going for the meat.
Yeah.
Just going, hey, I've noticed these things about you, and diving right in this, and walls and flags coming up. So I love that. I love that. When you and I talked earlier, one of the things you talked about was you wanted to help make others feel a little less alone. And that's such a powerful statement to me. Especially in light of what we've already talked about, there's such an isolated, lonely generation. How can we do that? How can we reach out to others and make ourselves more of a community where we seem to be in silos so often and we don't seem to be connected? What would you recommend that we do? How can we approach this?
I would recommend authenticity within yourself.
Ooh.
That being honest about how you feel, being honest with your emotions. And I think that an easy first step that anybody can take is that the next time somebody asks you, how are you? Answer it honestly. Because we all do the same thing, like, how are you? Oh, I'm good. How are you? We do the same exchange. But next time somebody asks you, how are you? Answer it honestly. I'm not doing so great. I had a rough morning, but, you know, I'm doing better. Or say, actually, I'm having a pretty awful day, not really having the best day. And just little things like that, by showing other people that you are being real with your emotions that you not only show them that they can too, but you're also showing them that you're a safe person, that if they're not doing okay, that they can come to you and talk to you about it.
Wow. Irony of what you just said, or the coincidence of what you just said, this past Sunday at church, the class that I was a part of, the guy who was leading the class, said almost those exact same words. And he was actually sharing that he had had a rough night the night before, a rough day, and was the family was not doing well. And as he was getting coffee that morning, person walked up to him who he didn't know and said, "Hey, how are you doing?" He said, "Not just blurry." He said, "Oh, I'm doing fine. How are you doing?" And he walked away and said, "Well, that's not even close to being true." And we debated whether or not, you know, on that occasion, if he should have been honest. I was like, if you'd have been honest, then you just scared that person away. I mean, they don't even know who you are. But if I had asked that to him, would he have said the same thing? I love that, being honest and authentic. That's hard.
It is. It's very hard.
That's hard. That's hard. Tell me about the foundation that you started as a, from the past experiences that, you had as a suicide loss survivor.
Yeah, I in my grief and in my processing of my grief, I like I said earlier, I wanted to do something with it. I didn't just want to sit with it. So also adding on to all of my other many things that I decided that I was going to take on, I founded the Sean Flynn Foundation. My cousin's name was Sean Flynn, and I founded it in order to bring awareness to the importance of concussion education. My cousin died by suicide as a result of several sports-related concussions that we believe that he had CTE, which is something that a lot of people think that only NFL players or hockey players have, but that's not
the... Tell our audience what that stands for.
That stands for chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And there's a great movie by Will Smith. It's called Concussion. It's about what CTE is and how the doctor who Will Smith plays found out what CTE was. But in a sense, it's the... Our brains sit in like water. Like, it's just floating in here. And when you have repeated trauma to your brain by a traumatic brain injury, by concussion, it does things to our brain because our brain is an organ. Mm-hmm. And my cousin was a goalie. And after his last major concussion, when he was kneed in the face in goal, he was never the same after that. So I founded the Sean Flynn Foundation to also bring awareness to that, because it's not talked about enough how concussions have a direct impact on mental health. So we talk about concussions, we talk about mental health, we talk about suicide prevention. But my favorite thing that we do with the Sean Flynn Foundation is we provide scholarship. That my cousin was the funny guy. He was the class clown of his high school 2 years in a row. And I know that if there's anything Sean would want us to do, it's to continue to laugh. And so I founded a scholarship that's open to all high school juniors and seniors in the state of Pennsylvania. And it is a 300-word essay. Tell us a story from your life that will make us laugh. And we sit around and we read all these essays from all of these students from across Pennsylvania. And we just, and we laugh. So that's my favorite thing that we do. It's, we're also giving back to the community, and we're really honoring who Sean was.
I see a book there, a book of stories of the recipients of that over time that can motivate and inspire and encourage people through their stories.
Yeah.
One of the other things that, you said that was that really I found powerful as well is that you have a desire to empower young people to be able to advocate for themselves from the doctor's office to the Oval Office.
Yeah.
That's a huge goal. Unpack that for us, because that got me excited when I wrote it down and I circled it and I put a bunch of stars behind it and some checks behind it. So when you said that, it moved me, and let's unpack that for the audience, because that's powerful.
Well, thank you. I am a very big advocate for youth, and specifically youth voice. It makes sense to the organization that I work for, that it's called Youth Move National. MOVE stands for Motivating Others Through Voices of Experience. And the organization was founded by a group of young people who did not feel like their voices were being heard within systems of care that served them, youth serving systems. So I have a really big passion to elevate the voices of young people within systems of care, within youth serving systems. And I have so many amazing opportunities through my work to really help in this mission. But the heart of my passion really comes from being a young person, that I'm a disabled person. I went through the public school system and my voice was not heard. And so I want young people who had similar experiences that I did, I want them to be able to feel empowered, to speak up, to actually have their voices heard in equitable ways. And that if they want to just be heard within their doctor's office, then I want them to feel empowered to do so. If I want them to walk into the Oval Office and feel like their voices are going to be heard, I want them to do that too.
How are you doing this? How are you helping them to feel empowered to do this? What are some ways to do this? Because I'm hoping there's someone who's listening who's getting as excited as I did, and maybe they're catching a vision for what you're trying to do as well.
One of the things that we do is at Youth Move National is we offer a youth leadership training where we kind of teach young people the power that their lived experience has. One of our amazing participants in one of our leadership academies, she said that lived experience is like having a PhD in life.
Ooh.
And it's true. Lived experience is something that cannot be replicated within a classroom. So just really making sure that young people realize that the things that they experience has power, it holds weight, and that they deserve to be heard.
You're dropping some truth bombs all over the place today.
Well, thank
this you. Is like one of the more hashtagable podcast episodes that we've had. I've taken 2 pages of notes already here, and I still want to ask more about this. You are also got some competitions coming up, if I remember correctly. Is that going on? Share with us as we're closing out our time together. Let the audience know what you got on this so they can be supporting you and cheering you on from the sidelines.
Yeah, well, thank you. I currently hold a local title within the Miss America opportunity. I am Miss Heart of Lancaster. I live here in the amazing Lancaster, Pennsylvania. If you don't know where that is, that's okay. We're in good old Amish country here. But I will be competing for the opportunity and the job of Miss Pennsylvania this upcoming June. And within this organization, you have to have a community service initiative, something that you're passionate about. And it shouldn't be any surprise to what we spoke to today. I am very passionate about youth and young adults. And so I get to serve not only my community here in Lancaster, but I get to go throughout Pennsylvania to advocate for youth and young adults, that I believe that there should be action with advocacy, because advocacy without action is just words to me. So really like pushing that within my community service work is really important. And so look out for me this June as I compete for Miss Pennsylvania.
Well, good luck for you on that. And I cannot think of a better platform, a better service to be able to share with your state, with the Keystone State, than this opportunity for helping youth to advocate for themselves, especially in the areas of mental health. You've given me a lot of insight tonight. And, you know, I've been doing this for working with youth, you know, for over 30 years, and I still am learning stuff. And I learned so much tonight. In case you guys are wondering, we're recording this at night. we have learned so much during our time together, especially about looking for signs of how they're looking different.
Yeah.
Are they outside their norm? That was powerful to me, Angie, and I really appreciate that. That spoke to me. So I hope the audience did this as well. So how can they connect with you? Where can they find you if they want to follow you or connect with Youth Move National? Where can they find this information at?
We are on Instagram. There is our Instagram for my job. I think it is at Youth Move I think so. And then my personal Instagram is at No Shame in Brain Pain, which is kind of my tagline. And you can also, if you're interested in learning more about our amazing work that we do at Youth Move National, you can also find us at youthmovenational.org.
And listen, audience, you want to follow her. That's how we connected, is the algorithms of Instagram brought you to my feed one day, and I was like, whoa, this is somebody I want to meet and want to talk to. And I am so glad. This is one of those times that I'm glad of the algorithm. A lot of times I get, you know, these people don't have the best interest of their users at heart. But this time I'm glad that they did this, because this was very well. And we'll put as much of the links to these social medias as we can, and to the websites and stuff, in the show notes. So if you're listening to us, go to your favorite app and click on the show notes, and you'll find that there. You'll find the links there. And if you're watching this on YouTube, you know what to do. Just look straight down and you'll find it there. Amanda Grace, thank you so much for your time. This is really, it's such an amazingly big issue. It's such an important thing that people need to be aware of and not hide from. And you've given some very simple and practical ways that they can start their journey. And I love that they were a very good step one, looking for outside of the norm, and then the sandwiching. In pink clouding, that was the first time I'd heard that phrase before. And I really love the sharing of that. So thank you for the insights that you have taught me tonight, and our audience as well. So thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
And audience, thank you for being with us. Listen, if you've stuck with us for 35 minutes, you really liked what you were listening to or watching. So please like, share, and comment on this. And the most important of those three things is the share, because someone that you know needs to hear this message and they don't know about us. So share it with them, look at the links, get the information you need so that you can make a difference in someone's life. This episode may help save someone long-term if you can just do that first step. So thank you again for being with us. Thank you, Amanda Grace. And we'll see everyone again very soon on the Generation Youth Podcast.
And there you have it, another impactful episode of the Generation Youth Podcast. To all of our listeners out there, remember to hit that subscribe button on your preferred podcast platform so you can never miss an episode. Want to be a part of the Generation Youth community? Follow us on all of our social media platforms. We'll keep you connected with all of our upcoming episodes and inspiring initiatives. You're not just a listener here, you're a catalyst for change. Together, we're building a future filled with promise, potential, and endless possibilities. This journey is just starting, so keep tuning in, keep growing, and let's continue uplifting our youth one episode at a time. Thank you for joining us today, and until next time, let's keep sparking inspiration and igniting the future.